One and let's go. It is Tuesday night, September, what is it? 28th. Let's double check. 28th, night, the year 2010. And all is well in Alachua. And tonight we have an interesting topic. Of course, we're going to stay on topic. We've been talking about the mind. But something interesting has come up. And I want to present this to you tonight. So you're fortunate if you're listening. And I want to welcome Bhakti and Carol, who lives eternally on Krishna.com chat, and Bhakti Edgar, who was with us last week. And somewhere out there, it looks like Manjesh may be floating around, and Om G, and others. If you're watching this, just click the chat button below, where you see me, and you can enter the chat, and you can ask questions, and you can have access to what others are speaking or whether what others are chatting. So tonight we're going to talk about a topic that's rarely discussed in the relationship to the topics we've been discussing, and this is the topic of self-envy. And I want to explain a little bit why we're talking about this tonight. Well, many years ago I wrote an article. And the title of that article, it was a newsletter, not an article. I write newsletters. And devotees subscribe to my newsletters. And if you'd like to subscribe, you can go to www.tstrain.com and subscribe to the newsletter. You also, if you click on newsletters, have access to those newsletters. So, welcome, Birani and Spiritual Sky. So this newsletter was called Killer of the Soul. And in this newsletter, I was making the premise, or I was basing the article around the premise, that there are ways in which we act which exhibit a form of envy for our own self if we act detrimentally towards our spiritual progress, then it's a form of self-envy or self-hatred. Now, I decided I would take all these articles and put them into a book. And a couple of years ago, I had the book lightly edited, but I felt it needed more editing. So I found out a god sister of mine does editing, and I asked her to edit it. And so, in editing this chapter, she questioned this concept of self-envy or being envious of oneself. And she said that the application that she said Prabhupada doesn't use this, and then I said, well, he does use it, because that's where I got the word. And she said, it sounds like some psychological term, and then you're trying to base it on Shastra. And I said, no, Prabhupada uses it. And so I gave her a quote, but the quote was not in relation to devotees; it was in relation to non-devotees. And she said, that's my point. Prabhupada doesn't use it in relation to devotees. And then I sent her some more quotes in which Prabhupada did use it in relation to devotees. But at the same time, I was taking what Prabhupada said about non-devotees and I was applying it to devotees. And she felt that was a bit of a jump. So we had some discussion. And I'll key you in, or I'll bring you into that discussion. But I wanted to read some of the things which I presented to her that form the foundation of the discussion. So it should be interesting, and you're, of course, as always, welcome to ask questions or make comments and take part in the discussion. So generally or often how Prabhupada uses the word self-envy is in relation to people who are doing things which are sinful, which are undebatably sinful. And as a result of their sinful activities, they suffer. And therefore, they are doing activities which, in the name of benefiting them or the name of making them happy, are causing them to suffer, either immediately or in the future when they receive their karmic reaction. So therefore, Srila Prabhupada said that's an act of self-envy. Not only did Srila Prabhupada say that, but it's in the Bhagavatam, and I'll read the verse. And let me read the Sanskrit, because the Sanskrit contains words which describe self-envy. So this is from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 6th canto, 16th chapter, text 42. Kakshemo nijaparayo. Kriyan bharta swaparadruha dharmena swadrohat tavakopaha parasampidhaya cha tata dharma. Translation: how can a religious system that produces envy of oneself and of others be beneficial for oneself and for them? What is auspicious about following such a system? What is actually to be gained by causing pain to one's own self due to self-envy, and by causing pain to others, one arouses your anger, capital U, your anger, and practices irreligion. So twice in this verse, the concept of envy of oneself is presented. And in the Sanskrit, first we find swaparadruha. And Prabhupada translates this as which is envious of the performer and of others. In other words, the one who's doing the animal sacrifice and the animals that are being sacrificed. It's a form of envy of the animals to kill them, and an envious envy of oneself to perform the sacrifice because one will suffer. Then Prabhupada uses the word swadrohat. And swadrohat means from being envious of one's own self. So twice he uses this in relation to animal sacrifice. So let's read the purport, get some further details on this. Any religious system but the process of Bhagavad Dharma, service as an eternal servant of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is a system of envy of one's own self and of others. That's very heavy. Any system of religion other than the process of Bhagavad Dharma is a system of religion, or is a system of envy of one's own self and others. Why is Prabhupada saying that? Let's read. For example, there are many systems of religion in which animal sacrifices are recommended. Such animal sacrifices are inauspicious both for the performer and for the animal. Although one is sometimes permitted to sacrifice an animal before the goddess Kali and eat it, instead of purchasing meat from a slaughterhouse, permission to eat after a sacrifice in the presence of the goddess Kali is not the order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It is simply a concession for the miserable person who will not give up eating meat. It is meant to restrict his desire for unrestricted meat eating. Such a religious system is condemned. Therefore, Krishna says, Sarva dharman prityaja mamekam sharanam braja. Give up all other duties and surrender unto me. That is the last word in religion. So, again, the point, you commit a sinful activity in the name of religion, even not in the name of religion, but here Prabhupada's referring to a religious system in which sinful activities are not only permitted but encouraged in the name of religion, then this is a manifestation of envy of one's own self. Let's see what else Prabhupada says here. So we've already got the word self, envy of oneself, twice in the word meanings, once in the verse, or twice in the verse, and now once in the purport, and again we're going to read another time in the purport. So Prabhupada is quoting Bhagavad Gita. Bewildered by false ego, strength, pride, lust, and anger, the demon becomes envious of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is situated in his own body and in the bodies of others, and blasphemes against the real religion. Continuing Bhagavad Gita, those who are envious and mischievous, who are the lowest among men, are cast by me into the ocean of material existence, into various demoniac species of life, unquote. These persons are condemned by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as indicated by the words tava kopaha. A person who commits murder is envious of himself and also the person he has killed, for the result of committing murder is that he will be arrested and hanged. If one transgresses the laws of man-made government, he may escape being killed by the state, but no one can escape the laws of God. A killer of any animal must be killed in his next life by the same animal. This is the law of nature. One must follow the instructions of the Supreme Lord. Sarva dhamma paritya jama me kam sharanam braja. If one follows any other system of religion, he is subject to punishment by the Supreme Personality of Godhead in many different ways. Therefore, if one follows a concocted system of religion, he is envious not only of others but of himself. Consequently, his system of religion is useless. So there's a lot of emphasis there on being envious of oneself. Again, as this devotee pointed out, this does not refer to devotees. This distinctly refers to non-devotees who kill animals or who may kill others in the name of religion. So let's read something else Prabhupada said about this, which this definitely does not refer to devotees. That's a fact. Okay, Prabhupada, yes, cheating others, this is a conversation, yes, cheating others, cheating himself, just like this animal sacrifice. The man who is sacrificing, he is cheating himself, and he is cheating others also. Cheating, envious, just like a man who is killing another man. So he is envious to himself, as well as the man whom he is killing. Both. I am killing somebody, he is being killed. I am envious, and I forget that I'll be killed. Then I am envious to me also. So the Prabhupada is saying, by killing the other person, you're really killing yourself. So not only are you envious of that person, but because you're killing yourself, you're also envious of yourself. There's a saying, if you hold resentment towards another person, you should dig two graves, because you're killing them and you're killing yourself. So, so we have two distinct and very clear examples here of self-envy that are based on animal killing. And we as devotees don't kill animals. So therefore, we would say, well, this doesn't apply to us. And here's another example which appears not to apply to us either. Srila Prabhupada was asked the following question. In your books, you mention that if one does not take the time to understand how his activities are producing his next life, then one actually becomes envious of his own self. Can you further explain that? Prabhupada replied, yes. If he's going to become a dog next life, and if he does not take precaution, then is he not envying himself? So in other words, again, you're acting in a way which is detrimental to your spiritual progress. So you're acting in a way in which you're hurting yourself. So is that not envy of yourself? So, yes, that is envy of oneself. But again, this devotee made the point and said, well, this doesn't apply to us because we're not acting in a way in which we are offending ourselves. In this example, what's this example? We're not acting in a way in which we're going to become a dog in our next life. Hopefully you're not acting that way. Hopefully all of you out there are not acting in a way in which you could become a dog in your next life. Hopefully, you're acting in a way in which you'll be a devotee in your next life. So, she was making the assumption that we're all acting in devotional service, so that doesn't apply to us either. So now let's read another verse. This is from the fourth canto, verse 20, chapter 23, text 28. If you have the Bhagavatam available, you can go to these verses, or you can actually go on krishna.com. This is 4.23.28, and I'm going to read the Sanskrit again because then we can see how Prabhupada uses, again, the word envious of oneself, but in a different grammatical conjunction or context, not context, but a different similar words. I'm not a Sanskrit scholar. Excuse me. But similar. So the verse is, Savanchito patatmadruk kachena mahata bhuvi labdva pavagyam manusham vishayeshu visajyate. in, I'll read the translation, then we'll go back to the word meanings. Any person who engages himself within this material world in performing activities that necessitate great struggle, and who, after obtaining a human form of life, which is a chance to attain liberation from miseries, undertakes the difficult tasks of fruitive activities, must be considered to be cheated and envious of his own self. So now here we have the example of a person engaged in material activities. And material activities means struggle. So the verse says, one is struggling to be happy, struggling against the laws of nature. In other words, someone who's not engaged in devotional service. In the Sanskrit, we have the words atmadruk, which Prabhupada translates as envious of himself. Again, the devotee said, well, this doesn't describe devotees, because devotees are not struggling within the material world. Which I debated, but we'll come back to that. Another verse. If you have any questions, ask, comments, make them. I'm going to read another verse. This is from the 9th canto, 4th chapter, text 69, if you want to follow that, if you have your books there. And I will read the Sanskrit again. Upayam katas katayishyami tava vipra sunishva tat shinushva tat ayam hi atma bhi charashte yatas tam yahi mam chiram sadushu prahitam teja parhartu kurute shivam. Translation. O Brahmana, let me now advise you for your own protection. Please hear from me. By offending Maharaj Ambarish, you have acted with self-envy. This is Lord Vishnu speaking to Durvasa after he offended Ambarish, Maharaj. Therefore, you should go to him immediately without a moment's delay. One's so-called prowess, when employed against the devotee, certainly harms he who employs it. Thus, it is the subject, not the object, who is harmed. So here we have the same theme going around. You do something, it's like a boomerang reaction. You do something, it was either aimed at harming another person, or maybe not consciously you were trying to harm them, you were just going about your business, but you harmed another person, and that it harms you, and therefore it's an act of, considered by Shastra and by Srila Prabhupada, it's an act of self-envy. So let's read the purport. Now this certainly brings it more home than animal sacrifice, because we can offend devotees, because devotees are who we associate with or live with. We hang out with. So we don't like all of them, and we may become upset with them. We may offend them. And so by harming them, we're actually harming ourselves. A Vaishnava is always an object of envy for non-devotees, even when the non-devotee happens to be his father. Of course, you could give the argument here that Durvasa is not a devotee. He's a saintly person, a yogi, but not a devotee. But sometimes we are not devotees, even though we dress like devotees or call ourselves devotees. Sometimes we don't act like devotees. That's the point I'm getting to. To give a practical example, Hiranyakashipu was envious of Prahlad Maharaj, but the envy of the devotee was harmful to Hiranyakashipu, not to Prahlad. Let me read that again. To give a practical example, Hiranyakashipu was envious of Prahlad Maharaj, but this envy of the devotee was harmful to Hiranyakashipu. In other words, it didn't hurt Prahlad, not to Prahlad. It hurt Hiranyakashipu. So Hiranyakashipu was trying to hurt Prahlad. It didn't hurt him, but Hiranyakashipu was hurt by it. I'm a little slow there. I got it now. Okay. Every action taken by Hiranyakashipu against his son, Prahlad Maharaj, was taken very seriously by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And thus, when Hiranyakashipu was on the verge of killing Prahlad, the Lord personally appeared and killed Hiranyakashipu. Service to a Vaishnava gradually accumulates and becomes an asset for the devotee. Similarly, harmful activities directed against the devotee gradually become the ultimate cause of the performer's fall down. Even such a great brahmana and mystic yogi as Durvasa was in a most dangerous situation because of his offense at the lotus feet of Ambarish Maharaj, a pure devotee. So now I want to draw some parallels to our life and some conclusions. I made the point that in our own devotional life, we sometimes do things which are not, well, let me look like the least offensive thing. Sometimes we don't do things that we could be doing to help advance our spiritual life. Sometimes we're just lazy or influenced by ignorance. Sometimes we don't know what to do. So we could be doing something if we made the effort, we took the trouble to learn what to do or how to do it better, but we don't. So we could be elevating ourselves more than we are, but we don't bother. We just kind of take the easy way out, or we don't do anything, or we stop chanting our rounds. We should be chanting, we don't. Or we should be chanting now, we chant later. We don't. We put it off, and then we put it off to the next day. So we could be doing something. We could be reading the Bhagavatam. We could be listening to class. We're on YouTube looking at all kinds of things that may not be in relation to Krishna. So these are examples, things we could be doing that we don't do. We could even take this to a further, or elaborate on this further, I don't want to say further extreme, but perhaps for some it isn't extreme, and say, we're not chanting well. We could be chanting better, but we're not chanting well. So in that sense, we could be elevating ourselves, and maybe we're staying in the same position. Maybe we're going down. Maybe our chanting is so offensive, it's actually hurting us. So in some way, that's hurting us. Because we could be, even if it's neutral, it's hurting us relative to what we could be doing. You might say, well, it's not really hurting you. Well, relatively, I would say it is. Because relative to where you could be, it is hurting you. It's preventing, you're preventing yourself from being in a better position. But if we take it to another stage, where we're actually doing something which is detrimental to our bhakti. Sometimes we do things, it's not really detrimental, it's just not helpful. That's one stage. And I think that's very common for us. And the other stage is we're actually doing something which is detrimental. But even within bhakti, we can be doing something which is detrimental. And then, take it further, we could be offending a Vaishnava, which definitely is detrimental. So, if we're doing something in devotional service that we could recognize is not good for our bhakti, is in some way hurting us, it may be gossip, it may be just chanting bad rounds, it may be neglecting to, in a regular way, read Prabhupada's books, or maybe you don't offer your food, or you offer it very quickly, or you're not careful about what you eat. There's things that do affect us negatively. It's not killing animals. It's not offending devotees. It's not considered these gross acts of self-envy. But I made the point that it is an act of self-envy, perhaps not as intense, not as deep, but it is an act of self-envy on some level. And then I found something which Prabhupada said, and that confirms that. In this verse we just read about Ambarish being offended by Durvasa, in the word-for-word meanings, Prabhupada translates the word atma abhicharaha as self-envy or envious of yourself. And in parenthesis, he says, your mind has become your enemy. So then I said, okay, here's the evidence here. Prabhupada is using the example which we all have heard a million times, and if you've been watching or listening to this show, you've heard it practically every show. It's almost a cliche in ISKCON. The mind can be the friend or the enemy. I heard you all say that from all around the world. The mind can be the friend or the enemy. So Prabhupada now is saying, if the mind acts as the enemy, then we're acting in a way which is envious of our own self. And as we know, the mind often is the enemy, and sometimes we're fluctuating from enemy to friend, enemy to friend. And we have this verse in Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna says, control the lower self by the higher self. So that indicates there's a battle going on. It's like a weight, like in these old-time scales. If you go to India, you see them, right? Put your vegetables here, it goes down. Put your weights here. Okay, that's 2 kilos, right? So sometimes the mind's the enemy, sometimes it's the friend. The enemy is down here on the bottom. Okay, let me lift my hands. Sometimes the enemy is on top, pushes the friend down. So Krishna's saying, control the lower self by the higher self. Don't let the lower self overcome the higher self. So I concluded, therefore, if we're being controlled by the lower self, which would be the mind and senses controlling us, acting in ways which deter us and impede us in bhakti, then we would be acting out of envy of our own self. Now, there is a concept that comes up in the world of psychology, such as self-love, self-esteem, and they say self-esteem often manifests itself in a lack of self-love. So naturally, this devotee was thinking, oh, Mahatma's just talking secular psychology by talking about self-envy, envious of oneself. As I said before, and as I explained to her, that self-envy is not a word that I got from the secular world of psychology. I got it right out of our own books, as we read from the Bhagavatam. But then the opposite side of that, as I just said, would be self-love. Okay. If I'm acting out of self-envy, then I should act out of self-love. And then we could say, well, Prabhupada really never used that word, self-love. But he did say something which I believe is equivalent to self-love. When he said, physician, heal thyself, and that you can't help anybody unless you help yourself. So in one letter to one devotee, who, in my opinion, had the tendency to think about others' welfare above his own, to sacrifice his personal spiritual stability, to sacrifice his personal spiritual sadhana and practice, to give Krishna consciousness to others, Prabhupada wrote to him and said, the highest service, yes, the highest service is to save others, but even higher is to save yourself. Because obviously, if we don't save ourselves, how can we save anybody else? If we're not Krishna conscious, certainly we will have nothing to give others. So in Prabhupada saying, the highest service is to save others, but even higher is to save yourself, in saying that, then he's talking about self-love, self-preservation. Take care of yourself. Give yourself what you need to remain strong in Krishna consciousness. So in that sense, you could say, well, you can't really separate helping others from helping yourself. But helping yourself is foundational. It comes first, because without that, you won't be able to help others. So if we look at sadhana, for example, chanting 16 rounds, of course, you could go out and chant 16 rounds very loudly and liberate all the insects, the plants, and so forth. But generally, chanting japa is a personal activity. It's a personal vow we made. And when we made that vow, Prabhupada never made a stipulation that you should go chant japa very loudly outside to save all the fallen conditioned souls. But that chanting was for our own purification, our own liberation. So I think it's safe to say that's an act of self-love. And I think it's safe to say that all the activities of sadhana bhakti are acts of self-love, because they're all meant to uplift us, to purify us, to prepare us for our eternal relationship with Krishna. And even the activity of spreading Krishna consciousness, giving it to others, is also an act of self-love, because by helping others, we help ourselves. In fact, sometimes we can't help ourselves unless we help others. So in that sense, you could say, in the stage of Bhakti Sadhana Bhakti, everything we're doing are acts of self-purification, which we need, we require to uplift our consciousness to become more Krishna conscious. So therefore, they're all acts of self-love, which I'm contrasting to the concept of self-envy. And therefore, if we accept this premise, then we could say, in any way in which we impede those activities of bhakti, those activities of sadhana, in any way which we minimize them, avoid them, improperly execute them, it's an act to some degree, maybe it's very subtle, to some degree it's an act of self-envy, because we're doing something that ultimately hurts ourselves. And the reason I'm making these points is that if you hone in on this concept and start to kind of measure your activities in terms of, is this really an act of is this act beneficial to me? Is it actually helping me? Or is this act detrimental to me? You'll start to see this principle of self-love versus self-hatred or envy. Now, Prabhupada also uses the word killer of the soul, which was the name of this article. And then she said, that's so heavy. And she said, that Prabhupada is referring to non-devotees who engage in material activities. They're killing the soul. But many people have come to Krishna consciousness, have at some point done something that has caused them to leave Krishna consciousness. So figuratively, that's also a killing of the soul. At least temporarily, they've killed their spiritual life. So again, it is as possible for us to be envious of ourselves or kill our soul as it is for non-devotees, because we can turn our backs on Krishna at any time. And it was nicely explained by Giriraswami in one japa retreat. He said that as we're chanting, of course, we all know that as we're chanting, we lose focus. And sometimes the mind just goes off to so many places. And then, you know, eventually we bring it back. Hopefully we bring it back. And then we bring it back and we focus on the holy name. And then the mind goes off. And it may even go off in ways in which we become somewhat antagonistic to bhakti. Maybe it's subtle, but in some ways where we're turning away from Krishna or revolting, or just distracted, or perhaps just bored. And boredom is a sort of, we could say, of turning of our back on Krishna. Just, I don't really want to be with you. So he was saying that one of the meditations that he has when he's chanting is that chanting is like this, is a microcosm of our relationship with Krishna, because we're going in and out all the time. We're chanting Krishna and then we're forgetting. And then we're coming back to the mantra and we're forgetting. So I like that example, and I'm saying the same thing in a similar way. We can say coming in and out of Krishna consciousness is a manifestation of envy. Now Prabhupada said, as we all well know, that envy stems in our envy of Krishna. So, and because we're part of Krishna, if we're envious of any way, acting envious of Krishna, then that means we're envious of ourselves. We're part of Krishna, and there's the relationship. The sweetest and most important relationship is between ourselves and Krishna. So if I'm envious of Krishna, then I'm envious of myself, because I'm running away from that relationship. Now, another point that came to me that I made when this devotee was saying, well, you know, most of what Prabhupada is referring to in terms of self-envy are non-devotees, and it's very clear. Durvasa is not a devotee. He offended Ambarish Maharaj. It's very clear. We're talking about cheating systems of religion. We're talking about animal killing. We're talking about things which are clearly non-devotional. But I think it's important to look at how great acharyas see themselves. And you'll see, particularly in the songs of Bhaktivinoda, you'll see that he identifies himself with the qualities of materialists. And sometimes it's hard to understand, because you'll read his songs and he'll say things, I'm full of greed, I'm full of lust, I'm the lowest, I'm dishonest, I'm always thinking about in material enjoyment and so forth. And you're looking at this and saying that he's such a great devotee, How is that possible? But it's possible because that's how he's thinking of himself. He's thinking, just like Mahaprabhu said, I don't have any love for Krishna. And what's the proof that I don't have love for Krishna? The proof is I'm living. Because if I had love for Krishna, the separation would be so intense that I wouldn't be able to live. Now, do you think that way? Do I think that way? No. We don't refine it to such a point. But when you're so Krishna conscious, you'll see one speck of contamination as something very big. So the pure devotee is saying, of course, Prabhupada said they're also praying for us, so we become humble and we realize that we actually are full of lust, greed, anger, hatred, and so forth. Because if they don't say it, we may not think we are. But still, an elevated devotee will see one speck of contamination and will think, just see, I'm just the lowest of the low. So my point was that within this context of self-envy, that we should see that any lack in ourselves or any action which we perform, which is not where we're at our best, then it's holding us back to some degree from moving forward to the degree that we could, then we should see. So I'm acting against my own interest. And if I'm acting against my own interest, some level, somewhere in my consciousness, I'm envious of myself. How many times do we tell ourselves, I don't care, I'll do it tomorrow. If it doesn't get done, I don't care. And then we have to confront it tomorrow. And actually, we do care because it's causing a problem. I see that as an action of, in some way, self-envy. Like we don't care that we're going to suffer. Or someone may think, I'll do this. So what if I go to jail? But when a person is arrested, definitely he cares if he's going to jail. He'll fight it. So sometimes we get in this place of ignorance where we're acting against our willpower. I know I should do this, but I don't. I know this is bad for me, but I continue to do it. I mean, we do things, we may smoke, drink, and do things that kill ourselves or harm our bodies. Isn't that an act of self-envy? Isn't that an act of self-hatred, ultimately? Even in the name of enjoyment? So that was my point, that anything that we do, which is not uplifting us, bringing us closer to Krishna, must be something that's either keeping us where we are or removing us to some degree, and therefore it's not in our self-interest to do that. We're not acting out of our best interest, and therefore we're acting to some degree, maybe very minute, some form of self-hatred. And if we see that, if we are in tune with that, it can help us, because then we'll come to this consciousness that I should do what is beneficial. Even if it's somewhat personally motivated, this will be good for me. Because that's what my guru wants me to do anyway. So it's service to him. Service to my guru. Prabhupada often said, so when people would say, well, what's the best thing I can do for you? He would say, well, love Krishna. Become a pure devotee. So it's service to our guru, it's service to Prabhupada to purify ourselves. So it's not really selfish in that sense. I mean, you could say in a broad sense, yes, it's selfish, but Prabhupada wants us to be selfish in that way, to take care of ourselves. So now, I'm going to look at some of the things I asked you to pitch in, and then I didn't even look at what you were saying. So, okay, where do we start here? Edgar. Manjesh is with us, Hare Krishna, and Edgar is asking, and Prema Sindhu is back, all the way from Ohio. Edgar says, what about declare boldly that my devotee never perishes, Bhagavad Gita 9:31, and paraphrasing Prabhupada here, one who is taken to Krishna consciousness is to be regarded as already liberated, even though he may appear to sin from time to time. So I'm confused about how a devotee can be self-envious. And Edgar goes on to say, I was under the impression a pure devotee is perfect even when he appears to sin or stumble. So it's a subjective point of view that the devotee has of himself. And I think I've already answered this question when I explained how, for example, Bhaktivinoda Thakur is praying, I'm the lowest of men, I'm greedy, I'm lusty, I'm always happy when I see others suffer, when I see they enjoy, I become miserable. So He's both acknowledging the mentality that we have and also showing that even on an elevated level of devotional service, one can feel this intense humility to actually think of oneself that way. Now, there's another point, because I'm relating this really to our situation. So the point is that the Prabhupada says in Bhagavad Gita chapter 7 that in the conditional stage, we're basically non-devotees. In other words, our conditioning, our habits, if you just let us flow downstream, so to speak, what will we do? Unless we were raised as devotees our entire life and have practiced very strict sadhana, our natural tendency will be towards maya. So that means our natural tendency may not always be within our self-interest. So that, then again, we go back to the example of the lower self, the higher self. So we're battling this demoniac side. The demon and the devotee live in the same body. So we're battling against this side which can take us away from Krishna and thereby engage us in doing things which are detrimental, or at least not beneficial. Now, in higher levels of bhakti, that's not an issue because one is now freed from the influence of the modes of nature. But again, look at what Mahaprabhu said. I don't have any love of Krishna. So even on this very high level, the highest level, Mahabhav, the humility becomes so intense that one thinks, I don't have it. Of course, that's a transcendental emotion. It's a different thing than what we can relate to. But we can relate to the general principle in that we experience in this world that, for example, the more you have something, the less you think you have it. It's only when you don't have much of it or know much about it that you think you know about it. It's like, well, that's why teenagers think they know everything, because they know so little about it. And so when they get older and they start learning about it, they realize the more they learn, the less they actually know. And so something similar happens in bhakti. For many of us, when we were young devotees, we actually thought within a few months we were going to be pure devotees. That's because we knew so little about the process of bhakti and what devotional service was. Thinking, yeah, within a few months I'll be self-realized, I'll be liberated, I'll be completely free from all desire for anything but Krishna. So then as you advance, you become more aware of your own frailties, your own lackings, your own contaminations. You find this, if you advance your japa, then you will realize how poorly you're chanting right now. But it's only by advancing that we realize the former condition that we came from. So by advancing more and more in bhakti, we can see, yes, I was envious of my own self. Or we may more clearly realize, I am envious of my own self. So it's even possible that a pure devotee has this subjective experience that he's envious of his self if he doesn't, because he feels that he's not fully surrendered to Krishna. But from our perspective, a more objective perspective, we see, no, that's not true. He is not envious of himself. He's fully engaged in devotional service, 100%, not influenced by the modes of nature. So what we see, what he's experiencing, may be different. But for ourselves, certainly, we are battling with our minds on a regular basis. Sometimes it's a constant battle. It's always gnawing at us. And so therefore, Prabhupada says, that's a manifestation of self-envy, particularly if you act on that. And it's a potential manifestation of self-envy. And I would say, from my own experience, the way I experience the mind, it's sometimes when the mind is working against me, I just feel like alienated from myself. And I feel like, yeah, this mind is not interested in what I'm interested in. So the mind is envious of me, ultimately. So Edgar now asks, so in Krishna's eyes, the pure devotee is perfect, but in the devotee's own eyes, he should acknowledge that he is doing something detrimental to his service. Well, yes, because that's the way you improve. Just like we would glorify Prabhupada, but Prabhupada would say, no, it's not, I haven't really done anything, it's just the mercy of my guru, I'm just an ordinary person. So that's how he was feeling about himself. You know, I'm not special. I have so many faults, Sometimes he would say, we all have faults. I have faults, you have faults. So you can say, okay, he's playing like an ordinary person. That may be there. Prabhupada has said that. But it doesn't discount the fact that Prabhupada may be feeling that way also, in his own humility, even though there is no fault. I have no love for Krishna. A devotee thinks that way. I have no love for Krishna. A neophyte thinks, I love Krishna. You talk to Christians. Yeah, I love the Lord. I love God. When you actually understand what love is, then you realize you don't. You realize you love your body. You love your mother. You love your husband, wife, and your kids. That's what you love. You love your car. You love your chocolate ice cream. You don't love God. You love God when he gives you stuff. And life is good. So, you know, as you advance, you realize actually you don't have these things. And that's good for us because that keeps us humble. And if we think we have him, then we can become proud. Yeah, I'm very advanced. We should never think like that. It's very dangerous. We should think, why am I acting in a way which is detrimental to my own well-being? Why am I listening to this rascal mind who does not have my interest in mind? I never want to act in a way where I would be contributing to my own detriment. I don't want to act in a way which is in any way detrimental to my well-being and my welfare. So, I have noticed, and I know that devotees may not think of themselves in this way, but I have noticed that advanced devotees take very good care of their spiritual lives. And that's why they're advanced. And they may not think, oh, this is an act of self-love. But from our perspective, we see, yes, it is. Because they are taking care of their spiritual lives. They're careful. And right in Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada said, Mahatma is careful to never put himself in a situation which would be detrimental for his realization of Krishna consciousness. So, very careful to take care of himself. Because taking care of ourselves is a necessary service in our relationship to Krishna. Just like I am a father, so it's important for me to take care of my health because my family, my wife and daughter, depend on me. And if I don't take care of myself, it would disrupt the family. So my act of self-preservation is also an act of service. So you'll see advanced devotees take very good care of their spiritual lives. And it's an act of service to others. Service to others, you take care of yourself. They go together. And Edgar says, okay, I got it. Anyway, this is what I'm drawing out of what Prabhupada said here. It seems, you know, it doesn't seem, but he's making it clear that if you do something to harm another person, it harms you. So now we're taking it to the point of say, well, if you do anything that ends up being harmful for you, then that must also be an act of self-envy, even if it's not harming anyone else. It's just harming you. It's harming your relationship with Krishna. So then it is, in that sense, it is harming somebody else because it's harming your relationship with Krishna. Or with your guru, because your guru wants you to have your relationship with Krishna. But Prabhupada said, the greatest service, what? Love Krishna. That's how you can serve me. The best service you can do for me is to love Krishna. So, try to meditate on this concept. When you can meditate on it, it's really nice to meditate on it when you're chanting japa. Because as you drift away, or as your rounds may become offensive, or on the borderline of being offensive, you can think, okay, this is detrimental to my spiritual progress. And therefore, If I'm not making the effort to chant better, am I not acting out of envy of my own self? Is this not detrimental to my spiritual advancement? And thus, is this not an act of self-envy on some level? Am I not acting in a way which hurts myself? And that's the whole irony of the material world, that the pain and suffering that comes to us is self-created. I mean, unless an earthquake comes or this or that, you know, you could say, well, it was your karma, you took birth in the material world and you destroyed somebody's house, so in this life you were meant to come back and be in an earthquake and your building falls out from under you. I mean, you could say that, but just in the more practical sense of what we see so much of the suffering we create is self-inflicted. We do things which end up causing us pain. And therefore, can't we say that's an act of self-envy? You know, particularly, we're wise enough, we're smart enough now to know what causes pain. I mean, we have both experience and we have Shastric knowledge. If I act in passion, Krishna says, it's going to cause pain. There's no way around it. You suck on your lollipop, it's good. But at some point, it's going to give you a stomachache. That's happiness and passion. Krishna says that, that's our experience, we know it. So therefore, if we're acting that way, we're acting against our self-interest. That's the irony of the material world. We create our own misery in the name of enjoyment. That's happiness in the mode of passion. You create misery in the name of enjoyment because it always turns sour. And happiness in ignorance, which is where Prabhupada says most people in Kali Yuga are in ignorance, happiness in ignorance is always miserable. But you look at these great leaders. I don't know if they were great. You say great, but powerful leaders: Napoleon, Hitler, other ones that were attempting to conquer the world, who are now attempting to conquer the world today. And you look at all the anxiety they were constantly in order to build up their power and obtain world dominance, which is what they were trying to do, right? Isn't that what Hitler was trying to do? Isn't that what Napoleon was trying to do? Who else was there? Who are the Alexander the Great and so many? You know, world dominance. There are people today who are planning how to take over the world. World dominance, the powerful people of the world. Yeah. They want to dominate. There's so many things going on that we think are accidental in our society that are not accidental. They're planned. Prabhupada has talked repeatedly about leaders, how demoniac they are. He said it, and I would sometimes think, oh, Prabhupada's exaggerating, give them some slack. And Prabhupada's not exaggerating at all. Look at the history of the world. Stalin's male, Mao Zedong, all these people. And so you look at their effort to achieve world dominance, it's filled with what? Pain, misery, struggle, get rid of the enemy, strategizing people against them. There's pain all the way through. That's happiness and ignorance. It's just painful. It's always painful. So we know this. This is our experience. We know that if we act in passion or in ignorance, the result is pain. It's detrimental. It hurts us. Not only is it painful, but degrades us. And we know that. So are we not acting out of self-envy? I mean, if you don't know that, you're just stupid and you just do it and think bad luck. You know, like you're in Las Vegas and you're, you know, playing the slot machine. So, well, you know, I had that relationship that turned sour. Let's try this one. Had that job, it turned sour. Let's try this one. I went to this school, it wasn't good. Let's try this. You may just think it's the luck of the draw. You just may be dull. But we're not dull. We know that. We know by experience, and Krishna tells us. You know, this is what happens when you try to enjoy your senses. So is that not an act of self-envy? You know it's bad for you and you do it? Come on, it is. So that's the paradox we're caught up in. That's the dilemma our lives are caught up in. this paradox of acting in a way in the name of enjoyment which hurts us. And ultimately, when we don't do our sadhana, we're thinking, this sadhana is painful, I don't want to do it. I have to get up early, I have to chant, I have to focus, I have to do, I'd rather be watching TV, I'd rather be surfing the internet, but I have to do this. I should read Bhagavatam, but I'd rather read the news. So, it's difficult, isn't it? It's painful, it's not always easy. But it's always detrimental if we don't. So we all often want to just be lazy and just take the easy way out. It's trouble. It's easier just to lay back and do something that's not going to help you. And that's often why we do it. So my whole point of this topic is, if we are conscious, say, no, this is what I'm doing now. I'm really turning against myself. And if that thought awakens, it can help us sort out where we want to go to and how to get out of that situation. So Spiritual Sky says, they want total control of us. Yes. Dear Prabhu, do you think the same people keep coming back and this is all predetermined? Can these people be stopped? Or is this supposed to be played out? I was wondering if some of these great demons are actually predicted in Shastra, because, you know, it's obvious that not the average guy down the street is going to rise to positions of great world dominance and power like these people. Is there a plan? I mean, I would like to say that there is a plan, and everything is under Lord Chaitanya's will, and he takes everyone's karma and he swishes it around in a way that ultimately will make it easier for people to become Krishna conscious and come to Krishna consciousness. And I like to think of it in this way, and he's waiting for us to get it together so we can bring more people into Krishna consciousness. And that whatever happens in the world is part of his plan, and he'll use these people to ultimately help us. Of course, on the other hand, you could pose the argument that these people all have their independent will, independent of what the Krishna consciousness movement does. You know, Prabhupada talked about demoniac leaders, but he never told us to do anything other than spread Krishna consciousness. And the impetus that he gave us was by showing us that Krishna consciousness can actually help people, and these so-called leaders, misleaders, will never help people. So we're the only ones that can do it. So he would point out what they're doing just to show us, or just to convince us, that they're degrading people, that they're actually enemies, and that we have the knowledge, we have the information, and we have the process which can actually help people. So Prabhupada's solution was always go forward with Krishna consciousness. It was never to attack these people, never to try to, you know, psychoanalyze or politically analyze the whole thing. He would just kind of, you know, blanket them over. He said, they're just enemies. They can't help anybody. And we have to be the ones, or we are the ones who can actually help people. And these people will destroy civilization. And we see that. They're only doing what Prabhupada said they would do. So when you see all these, you hear about all these demoniac people and organizations and secret societies and things that these leaders plan to do, and, you know, just common things which sometimes come up that everyone's aware of, where they, you know, they want to put a ban on all vitamins and what herbs, make them illegal, or you have to get prescription, you know, or they. You know, Monsanto wants to rule the world, control the food. You can't grow your own seeds. Monsanto, you only can buy Monsanto seeds. You can't grow your own. Control, you know, these people, they're trying, you know, they all have their schemes to control the world. You know, create diseases, get rid of massive amounts of people. So, you know, you can look at this stuff and say, ultimately, Prabhupada predicted all this because he said that these, you know, demoniac leaders are ruthless. And then, so you have these examples, you know, your Kongsas and so forth. That's what they were all about. They were about personal power and dominance. It's not about money, it's about power. They all have the money. It's about power and dominance, control. So Prabhupada once said, he said, if they knew what I was doing, they would kill me. Because Prabhupada is going right against the grain of the demoniac world controllers. So who these guys are, all we can say is they're demons. Not, they're big demons, but not as big as the demons that Krishna faced. They're not that big. They're not that powerful. And Prabhupada seemed to think that if we enthusiastically spread Krishna consciousness, we could save the world. People would come to us. They would see things from our perspective. So that's where the power lies. Good and evil are always fighting. So our impetus in learning about what misleaders are doing should be to become examples ourselves and help other people as much as we can so that they won't have to suffer under misleaders. And of course the Bhagavatam says as Kali Yuga progresses, it's going to get worse and worse. Spiritual Sky says, I'm having problems keeping focused on Lord Krishna because they're coming at us from every direction now. Yeah, so it should be an impetus to become more Krishna conscious. Otherwise, you'll just get programmed by the media and programmed. What? Or what are you saying? You're so angry about what they're doing? But the anger, if that's the case, either you're saying one of two things. Either you're just distracted by because the media is so powerful, the advertising world is so powerful that they have you going in all directions, or you're saying you're so angry because you know what's going on. But you can direct that anger in a positive way to do something. And of course, you know, Prabhupada's program was always the real answer is purify the world with prasadam and the holy name and transcendental knowledge. And if you do that, people will have the intelligence to see what's really going on and how much they have been controlled. I mean, the whole, yeah, so you can direct your hatred and, you know, direct it in a positive way. That you hate these people so much, you want to let the world know how they're being controlled, manipulated, made to think they're free, and how Krishna consciousness is really the solution. It's really the solution. Otherwise, it's like, it's Kali Yuga and it's just endless, you know, and there's so many good people out there who are trying to fight demoniac forces, but they don't all really have good weapons, and the demoniac forces are powerful. So we have to fight it. We have the best weapons. And our weapons are working, even though it doesn't look like it, but they are. The world is changing. The world is definitely changing. And Prabhupada would say that these changes that we see in the world, you know, bringing people more and more people into Satvagun and beyond that, to the Vishuddhisattva, the transcendental platform, it's because of the purity of the holy name as it's being chanted around the world and the distribution of prasadam and transcendental knowledge. So I think you can use your frustration with these people, your anger towards them, your hatred towards them, or I think you should use it as an impetus for your own spiritual life and as an impetus to give it Krishna consciousness to others and make people aware of what's going on. Yeah, it is very bad. It's horrible. And that's why in Vedic society, there were Brahmins, because Brahmins would control everybody. Now, if things are running rampant, The vaishyas, not even kshatriyas, it's vaishyas. The people who have the money control the world. That's not a good thing. The Brahmins need to control the world, not the people with the money. I just heard this thing. I heard this thing that, who was this? The Rothschild in like 1901 in England, he got news that Napoleon was defeated. And he got the news before everyone. So he put out the rumor that Napoleon won the war. As a result, the stock market crashed, right? He bought everything up. He owned England. The government didn't run England. He ran it. He had all the money. Then they found out Napoleon was defeated and the stock market rose. So, those with the money, they controlled. The people with the money funded all the world wars. It was good business. They funded both sides, the Allies and the, what are the other guys called? The Allies and the, what are they called? Now they're called the Axis of Evil. What were they called in those days? The enemies? Yeah, the Axis of Evil. Give a dog a bad name and hang it, you know. So we live in a world in which is controlled by vaishyas, not by Brahmins, you know. If you had some good kshatriyas, okay, they'd control the vaishyas. But you don't, you know, now it's the vaishyas rule the world. The guys with the money control. It's the presidents, not the presidents, not the political leaders. It's the guys with the money. You know, that's the way the world works. The axis of evil is our own heart, yes. That's what we want, the axis of evil. Our own mind, the axis of evil. Okay, so we don't like what these guys are doing, and that's why Prabhupada said we should become self-sufficient. We should have our own farms, so we can get away from this. He said, don't be dependent on these guys. Don't be dependent on their electricity, their water, their food, or anything. So that's the ideal situation for us as devotees. If we live in the society, we're dependent on it. Then, you know, we let these guys, you know, throw us around here and there. You know, stock market goes up, stock market goes down, job, unemployment goes up, goes down. It's all these guys, they know, you know, we're going to go to Iran, we're not going to go to Iran. It's not like this is in the hands of Obama. It's a much higher, goes much higher up. So Prabhupada's idea is, you know, get away from this whole thing, then we won't be dependent on them. We won't be, the world can blow up and there we are. We're living in our communities. We're happy campers. We're chanting Hare Krishna. We're okay. And then he said, then people will want to come and join us because the world will get so bad. People will be taxed to in such a way they'll run away from the leaders. Yeah, you know, if it's up to Monsanto, you know, if you don't buy their seeds, you can't grow anything. If you don't buy their fertilizer, which will give you cancer anyway. Their weed killer will kill the weeds. It'll also kill you at the same time. You know, I mean, it's demoniac. It's really demoniac. So, you know, I mean, if you look at all this stuff and you see what Prabhupada said, he was definitely get out of the system. Don't depend on it. But that's a big job, and we're not being successful at it yet for many reasons. But we'll end here. That's something to think about. And Hare Krishna to all of you. And don't have nightmares tonight. Think of Krishna. He will conquer the demons. He always does. Yatra Yogeshvara Krishna. Wherever there's the master of mystics, Krishna. Yatra Parta Dunundara. And wherever there's Arjuna, there will always be Vijaya, victory. So do not fear. Hare Krishna. Jai Ho.